From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The U.S. House of Representatives voted last week to pass a historic bill to decriminalize marijuana nationwide called the MORE Act. The Democrat-controlled House passed the bill 228-164. As growing numbers of states around the nation have legalized cannabis. House Democrats linked the passage of the bill to the harm that the war on drugs has done to communities of color, especially. Republican lawmakers opposed the bill, making it unlikely to pass the GOP-dominated Senate. Republican voters, like Democrats, are largely in favor of legalization. My guest is Paul Armentano, Deputy Director of NORML, which is an advocacy group working on marijuana legalization. He also serves on the faculty of Oaksterdam University in Auckland, where he's a chair of science. He's a regular contributor to TheHill.com and to numerous other print and online publications, and co-author of the book Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So there's sort of two big stories just in the last several weeks. One is the bill that the House passed. The other is that growing numbers of states continue to legalize to varying degrees cannabis. Let's talk about the MORE Act first. I understand it was sponsored by Senator and soon-to-be Vice President Kamala Harris. What is the MORE Act?
So very similar to how the federal government almost now a century ago repealed the federal prohibition of alcohol, thereby allowing individual states to be the primary decision makers and regulators of alcohol policy. The MORE Act similarly repeals the existing federal prohibition on marijuana, and it allows the individual states to make their own determinations with respect to whether marijuana ought to be legal or illegal. By doing so, it corrects this existing chasm that we now have in 36 states that have opted or elected to have marijuana policies that are totally out of sync with federal prohibition.
So this bill would also address convictions of people on the basis of either having been caught with marijuana or selling it?
That is correct. There is a growing recognition among the American public, not only that marijuana ought to be legal and regulated for adults, but that those millions of individuals who have the stigma of a past marijuana conviction ought to be able to have that situation remedied. So just like many states that have now legalized the adult use of marijuana are facilitating the expungement of the criminal records of those that have past criminal records for marijuana-related activities, the MORE Act says that those that have been convicted under federal marijuana laws would be able to have those convictions expunged. And it would also provide grant funding to induce state lawmakers to review those state level convictions and to facilitate the repeal of those convictions as well.
So are the majority of convictions at the state level? If so, it would have to sort of go through each state's process in order to have full sort of expunging of records?
That is correct. Over 99% of the 600,000 or so marijuana arrests that are made every year are at the state level. And this has been going on annually now for decades. So there are literally tens of millions of Americans out there that carry the burden of a state level marijuana conviction. The federal government cannot nullify those state level convictions. Only the individual states can do that. But the MORE Act provides incentives to encourage more states to engage and facilitate that process.
So the federal government's prohibition on marijuana has always been a threat hanging over state-level legalization efforts, right? I mean, it sort of depends on who is in the White House at the time. And even when states like, say, California have decriminalized cannabis, there's always been the risk that the federal government would start enforcing federal laws if the MORE Act were to become law. That overall threat, potential threat from the federal level would be removed, right?
Exactly. Like I said earlier, we now have 36 states that have marijuana policies that are out of step with the federal prohibition or criminalization of marijuana.
So majority.
Those two sets of policies really cannot coexist. And this remedies that situation by taking the federal government and the threat of federal enforcement out of the equation.
How did the Trump administration address the issue of federal prohibition on marijuana? We know that there was, you know, during the George W. Bush administration, a serious threat from the federal government. During the Obama years, President Obama chose to take a more hands-off approach and allow states to pursue what they wanted to pursue. Did Trump do anything different from Obama?
That's a very interesting question, because the Trump administration has sent some mixed signals. On the one hand, we actually have public statements made by President Trump, both on the campaign trail and then shortly after becoming president, saying that he was personally okay with the concept of medical marijuana and that states should have some flexibility to engage in those sort of policies. But then one of his first acts as president was to appoint as Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who was one of the most rabid anti-marijuana people on the planet. One of the first things Jeff Sessions did as Attorney General was repeal a memorandum, a Department of Justice memorandum that had been issued under the Obama administration that told U.S. attorneys to take a hands-off approach in these states that have legalized marijuana for either adult use or medical use. So on the one hand, we have the president saying that he supports states having the ability to engage in these sort of legalization regimes. And then on the other hand, we had an attorney general that literally removed the protections that had previously been in place by the past administration. At the end of the day, when all is said and done, despite some of these mixed messages, the Trump administration has in practice largely taken a hands-off approach though.
With the MORE Act passing the House, what sort of arguments did Republicans make against the MORE Act that would reflect what we might see in the Senate if the Senate were to even take up the bill?
Well, it's very interesting. The Republicans had ample opportunities to weigh in on the substance of this legislation. This was not a new bill. This bill was introduced some 18 months ago or so. It had several hearings in the House of Representatives. And as you noted, companion legislation was also in the U.S. Senate, legislation sponsored by now Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. So there was certainly ample time for Republicans to weigh in. They really chose, by and large, not to. And much of the criticism that they raised in recent days had to do with the timing of the issue, not the substance of the bill itself. Hmm.
So they were suggesting that because the Senate should be taking up COVID relief or the funding of the government, that this wasn't the time to take up marijuana legalization. If that is the case, what would be the response to that, say, from Democrats who did vote in the House?
The fact is that we are long overdue the time for which federal politicians should be acting. As you noted earlier, this past November, we had a clean sweep at the ballot box. We had notably red states like South Dakota passing adult use marijuana legislation. At the same time, overwhelmingly blue states like New Jersey pass these same policies. The fact is that nearly 7 out of 10 voters in America say that the adult use of marijuana ought to be legal, and about 75% of voters, whether or not they think marijuana ought to be legal or not, believe that the federal government should leave the states alone to make their own decisions on this issue. This is what the people want. And in a representative democracy, our elected officials ought to be responding to that, not bickering over the timing of this issue.
How was it that public opinion shifted on this issue? I mean, because it's only been sort of a relatively short period of time that you've seen this overwhelming public support for legalization, right?
Well, that's fairly true. This is really an issue where public support has evolved over the last couple of decades. I think there's a number of reasons why, but I think one of the most important reasons is this discussion about legalizing and regulating marijuana. It's gone from theory to practice. There was a time where we could discuss the pros, we could discuss the cons of this policy, but at the end of the day, it was no one definitively could speak with respect to what the impact of legalization would be on society and whether or not it would be a preferable policy to prohibition. Now we can speak definitively. We have some regions of this country that have more than a 2.5 decade long experience with the regulation of medical cannabis. And we have several states that now have a nearly decade long experience with the regulation of the adult use of marijuana. At the end of the day, not a single state in America has ever repealed or even rolled back a marijuana legalization law. In fact, public support for these policies is far stronger now after they've been implemented than it was when we were initially debating these issues. That shows that the American public clearly prefers legalization over the failed policy of criminalization, and they're not going to go back.
There's also financial reasons for legalization. And of course, unfortunately, in this country, we tend to measure whether something is worth doing by how much money it might save a government or raise for a government in terms of revenues. And we've seen in states that have legalized marijuana that the sales and the sales taxes have been a pretty significant source of revenue. The Congressional Budget Office, I understand, did an analysis of the MORE Act showing that nationwide, if the federal government decriminalized it, the bill would generate almost $14 billion in net revenue over 10 years for the U.S. Treasury and cut federal prison spending by nearly $1 billion. How persuasive are these arguments?
You know, it definitely depends. Certainly for among politicians, anytime you can suggest streams of new revenue, generally that gets their attention.
Especially at this time when states are hemorrhaging money and because of the COVID crisis, I imagine, you know, for those lawmakers worried about the timing of this issue, that's a pretty good argument.
Yeah, and in fact, it certainly at the state level, we've seen politicians in a number of states revisit this issue and raise it specifically because of the fact that they are facing these budgetary shortfalls. That's certainly the narrative that's taking place right now in Connecticut, in Pennsylvania, in several states around the country. One thing, though, I do want to highlight is that we only can begin to sit down and have these sort of discussions about perhaps the cost of prohibition versus the cost of legalization if we're at a point where the majority of Americans are okay with marijuana use itself. And that's a major shift that has occurred in the last 20 to 30 years. If you go back to the 1980s and 90s, most Americans simply said the use of marijuana itself was wrong. As long as the majority of Americans believed that, we could not have these more sophisticated discussions. That is the most crucial shift that I think has taken place in our culture that has shaped public opinion, is the stigma surrounding the use of marijuana is no longer there. And now that that has been removed, we can have these sensible, more sophisticated discussions about, okay, marijuana is here, it's here to stay. How do we regulate these activities in an appropriate manner that doesn't harm society and doesn't stigmatize and criminalize the individual?
The fact that the House passed this bill is significant because, of course, it's the first time, I understand, that a bill of this sort has passed a congressional body. Even if it doesn't pass the Senate or even get introduced into the Senate, are you hopeful that it'll have the benefit of having started the conversation? I mean, you know, it's given an excuse for you and I to talk about this so that a potential future Congress might see this bill pass both houses and have it signed into law.
Yes, this is important. Look, Congress criminalized marijuana in 1970. This vote marked the first time in 50 years that a chamber of the U.S. Congress has revisited that decision and voted to repeal it. Just like I said earlier, we've moved from theory to practice when it comes to state-level legalization and regulation of marijuana. This, for the first time, moved us from theoretically talking about what the federal repeal of marijuana prohibition would look like to actually having a congressional body move forward with legislation that does just that. This is now our new starting point. And as we approach 2021, we are looking forward to the opportunity to have a House of Representatives that has gone on record, taken a vote on the repeal of the federal prohibition of marijuana, and that we can then also work with an incoming administration that has publicly pledged to support many of the provisions that are in fact in the MORE Act that the House has just overwhelmingly passed.
And that brings me then to that question of the specifically the Biden-Harris administration, considering that the MORE Act was sponsored by Kamala Harris. What sorts of things can the Biden-Harris administration do that on the issue of marijuana legalization that don't need to go through congressional approval, considering that we're likely to have a hung Senate or a split Senate?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, it was Congress that enacted marijuana prohibition. And at the end of the day, I firmly believe it's going to have to be Congress that also ultimately amends that prohibition or repeals it altogether. The president likely does not possess the powers to do that on his own, nor do we have the expectation that Joe Biden would, in fact, try to do this on his own. That said, certainly a Biden-Harris administration can set the tone for the repeal of federal prohibition. And they can also make key appointments, such as who they decide to be U.S. Attorney General. They can hopefully select someone in that key position who shares this position that, in fact, the U.S. attorneys should largely take a hands-off approach and that we should try to formulate some sort of working system between the federal policy and the state policy that is copacetic and not at war with one another. Those are the sort of things the administration can do, and I hope will do, because we very well could have continued gridlock in Congress, at least going forward and for the first couple of years of 2021, depending how these Georgia Senate races turn out.
Right. What role do you think recreational cannabis use plays in our culture, during the pandemic. You wrote a book called Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? You know, people often turn to self-medication during times of trauma. And I imagine that cannabis might be a safer alternative than other narcotics or alcohol, or not. I mean, it depends on how people, of course, use it and the responsible manner in which they use it. But do you see it playing a role in terms of adult use? To take on a lot of the mental health issues that are likely cropping up during this very difficult year we've had?
It has been a very difficult year, and that's a very interesting question you ask. One of what I think one of the sort of cultural and political shifts that unexpectedly came about earlier this year was we saw in April and in May in dozens of states that have legalized the retail access of marijuana for either adults or for authorized patients. In virtually every single one of those states, during sort of the first wave of the pandemic, when many retailers were being shut down, these businesses were designated as essential businesses and allowed to stay open during that period of time. In addition, other changes, regulatory changes, were made at the state and local level in these jurisdictions to actually facilitate not just these businesses staying open, but to facilitate retail actions between the businesses and their customers. For instance, in many states, they allow these retailers to engage in home delivery of marijuana products, something they hadn't been able to engage in previously. They allowed retailers to place their products on online menus and have people place their orders and then engage in curbside pickup. That hadn't been allowed previously under the law. Those were changes that were made as a result of the pandemic in order to allow these retail facilities to both survive and to thrive. I think the notion that in 2020, we as a society didn't simply recognize that marijuana is part of the cultural fabric of this society, but that for many people, it is essential to a safe and healthy society. That, I think, is a radical political and cultural shift. Again, it's one of these tipping points that eventually has gotten us to the point where we were last week, when the House of Representatives, again, for the first time, voted to repeal marijuana prohibition altogether at the federal level.
Paul, give out a website for Normal where people can find out more about the work that you do.
I'd be happy to. Anyone who wants to stay abreast of what is happening in the world of marijuana and marijuana policy can go to the Normal website at norml.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our site. Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Paul Armentano, Deputy Director of Normal. He also serves on the faculty of Oaksterdam University in Auckland, where he's the Chair of Science. He's a regular contributor to TheHill.com and co-author of the book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? We've been discussing the passage of the MORE Act in the House. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.